Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Ohio General Assembly this week passed a bill that extends primary election absentee voting until April 28th and puts the kibosh on another plan for in-person voting in June. Governor Mike DeWine had postponed the original March 17 primary just hours before the polls were to open. He wanted absentee voting to be extended until June 2nd with in-person voting on that day. Now that in-person voting isn't an option, although some people with certain disabilities are going to be able to vote in person, but some voting rights advocates are concerned that the shorter time frame will disenfranchise some of the electorate. Andy Chow is a reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome back, Andy.
Good morning, Ann.
Okay, so first of all, what's the Ohio General Assembly, what is leadership telling you guys about why they went with this shorter time frame?
So they went with a shorter time frame for a few different reasons. One being that they were saying that there were a lot of local elections around the state, a lot of local levies that needed to be decided on earlier than usual, earlier than the June 2nd deadline that maybe schools or cities were needing to know ahead of time what the plan was as far as finances go earlier than June 2nd. And even the Ohio Democratic Party argued in its lawsuit that sort of kind of jumped into this discussion too, argued that an earlier deadline would help set and place delegates for their national convention. Because remember, the March 17th primary has been extended, so we don't know who the Democratic, who Ohio is voting for is for the Democratic presidential nominee. So the Democratic Party said that seating delegates would be something that would be, it would be nice to have that be determined earlier.
And Secretary of State Frank LaRose, what was his response?
Well, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, who is a Republican, and the House and Senate have a large majority, Republican majority control. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of walking the line of not outright coming out and, opposing the bill altogether. But he did point out that the plan that he had in place, he was arguing that the plan he had in place, the Ohio Voters First Act, was a more sensible timeline. The thing that reading between the lines of what he said, I think the thing that really was a concern to LaRose and a concern to other voter rights groups, and I'm sure you'll hear that later on in the show, the timeline, the window, the fact that having all of this wrapped up and ready to go by April 28th is something that, or 27th is something that is concerning to people because of the time it takes to post things. So to be able to mail out cards and postcards that inform voters of the process, and then for voters to have to mail something back to request an absentee ballot and then get just back and forth through the mail system, there's a concern that that's not enough time.
Right. I sent mine out this morning, and I'm still nervous that I'm not going to get a response back in time. And they're saying that it could be how long before they send out these reminder cards? I guess they've given the county boards of elections $7 million to send out cards to tell people about this. But that's going to take time.
Right. And so the Secretary of State's office is projecting that all the 7 million plus amount of postcards will be sent out to everybody by the second week of April. So that only gives you about 2 weeks to turn that around, to get to request an absentee ballot application, and then to get the absentee ballot and then to send it in.
Do they have an estimate of how many they're expecting want to vote in the primary or on this ballot, whether it's just the issues or the candidates?
You know, I'm not sure about turnout. I'm sure that there's information somewhere about projected turnout, but I'm not sure. And I think that the other thing that they have talked about is that because the process is just so different than what people are used to, it's hard to gauge just how many people would want to participate in the process. When Frank LaRose and Governor Mike DeWine talked about extending the primary or delaying it until June 2nd, they said that a big part of this is that people, just for whatever reason, believe that they must vote in person, that they're just not used to the mail-in system.
That's me.
It's going to be, yeah, and it's honestly, it's me too. And so it's hard to gauge how many people are willing to sort of change their ways and go with a mail-in process for this specific time.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about a new primary date set for April 20. Is it? Now I'm already 28th.
It's 28th.
The 28th. Mm-hmm. April 28th is the new deadline, and it's in mail-in voting only. And there is a process that has to take place through the mail system, although you could, as soon as you get your absentee ballot by mail from the Board of Elections, your local county Board of Elections, you could bring it to the county Board of Elections and drop it off after you've filled it out. Right, Andy?
That's right. So There is like a curbside process to all of this as well. And there are, and I'm not sure if it's every county Board of Elections, but we do know we're seeing reports from Franklin County Board of Elections that if you want to call the Franklin County Board of Elections, you can call and ask them to send an absentee ballot application. So you don't have to wait to print something out. You can call them and they can send it to you.
Coming up later in the program, we're going to hear from Jen Miller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio, and also the executive director, Aaron Ackerman, who's the executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. If you have any questions or comments about this, we really want to hear from you today. This is about questions you might have out there, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We want to hear your questions today. This is a super important issue that people be as informed as possible about what they need to do to get their vote counted in the 2020 primary election in Ohio. Any sense, Andy, are they talking yet about the general election in November?
You know, they haven't talked about it yet. When LaRose and DeWine were talking about the idea of extending the deadline and when they wanted to actually hold a primary, DeWine was pretty candid in saying that he wished they could hold the primary in September, because September was maybe the projected date, looking at the coronavirus, looking at all the modeling and statistics that are out there. September was the month that he maybe felt most comfortable having people go out and gather in large gatherings. So that's September, you know. And so 2 months later is the general election. So I think at this point, they're hoping that things might be able to continue as usual by that November general election.
Except that they're also predicting that the coronavirus could make a comeback sometime in October.
Yeah, and a lot of people have been using the 1918 influenza as sort of a benchmark for these types of things, where that was a pandemic that hit really hard in the winter of 1918, then sort of fizzled away a little bit during the summer and then came back in the fall. And so a lot of modeling is showing how that might happen again for coronavirus. I don't know if those have been backed up by several studies or not, but it is something that's being discussed. So, yeah, that is something to consider. I think right now what we have in front of us is sort of a game plan or a blueprint for if this were to happen again. I'm assuming that the governor, the secretary of state, the legislature would be a little more proactive in saying, listen, the chaos that happened the day before the primary earlier this month, they don't want to have that happen again. So if there are any hints of maybe a recurrence of this virus, I think that we're going to hear discussions a lot earlier in the process about it.
What are they worried? I mean, when you talk to the leadership in the Ohio General Assembly, what are they concerned about at this point?
Well, I think the idea of just delaying the process further and further down the line again leaves a lot of people in limbo when it comes to their local governments. At a time where local governments and school districts are already sort of scrambling to figure things out because of the pandemic, because of coronavirus. And so I think the big concern there was trying to make sure that the levies and those issues that were out there were sort of solidified earlier in the process. And I think the other thing is the idea of actually having a mass gathering again in June 2nd just seemed a little too risky. And so I think there were a lot of people who wanted to avoid that as well, that a mass in-person voting experience.
Right. And there are exceptions. People can vote in person if they have certain kinds of disabilities.
Yeah. So I believe it's, physical disabilities, developmental disabilities that, that the Board of Elections will stay open and will have people who are able to assist in those ways. I think it's probably similar to the assistance services that already exist during a typical election. Mm-hmm. And so that is an exemption. That is an acceptance.
So people who are blind, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Yes, I'd like to know, if you don't vote in the primary, would that denote you not being able to vote in the straight election?
In the general election?
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah, you can still vote in the general election. So, and that does go into play with the idea of extending the primary. Instead of saying that there's a new primary date, they're saying that the primary was on March 17th and they extended it through April. That closed the window to any new voter registration for this primary. However, to the question, voter registration will open up again, so people who did not vote in the primary can still vote in the general election.
Right, and you can register anytime you want. You just won't be eligible to vote in the primary if you haven't registered before the deadline previous.
Absolutely.
Right. And if you can vote in the primary, you should vote in the primary. People out there, don't ever give up. Try to vote every time, even when it seems stupid. Andy Chow, I want to thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Ann.
That's Andy Chow, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter, a beast, covering all the press conferences with the governor and health director Amy Acton for kind of weeks on end now. Thanks for all your hard work, Andy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We will continue our conversation, so stay with us. If you have some questions, any voting questions, we're going to have executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio and also the executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. So if you have any questions about voting, this is the program to get your call in, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Ohio General Assembly this week passed a bill that extends primary election absentee voting until April 28th and puts the kibosh on another plan for in-person voting in June. Governor Mike DeWine had postponed the original March 17 primary just hours before the polls were to open. He wanted absentee voting to be extended until June 2nd with in-person voting on that day. Now that in-person voting isn't an option, that is for most people, there are a very few exceptions. Some voting rights advocates are concerned that the shorter time frame will disenfranchise some of the electorate. Aaron Ackerman is the executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me on this morning.
You bet. Jen Miller is the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Welcome back, Jen.
Thanks, Ann.
The League of Women Voters of Ohio and several others voting rights groups sent a statement to the General Assembly about this legislation. What are you saying?
Our biggest concern is that April 28th is just absolutely not enough time. We can't blink our eyes and transform, you know, like a magician, and transform our voting system from a mostly in-person system to a mail, almost entirely mail-in system in 4 weeks. All vote-by-mail states generally conduct their mail sessions for 8 to 10 weeks, and that's after a lot of planning in advance.
Erin Ackerman, what are your thoughts about the time frame for this?
We think it presents challenges. We pretty much concur with Jen's assessment. We're not in a state that typically votes by mail, and there are lots of things that local boards of elections and the Secretary of State are going to have to do to ramp up for that. We had favored a date more mid-May. May 19th was our suggestion, but the bottom line is that's the date that the legislature chose, so we're going to do our best, and we're going to be prepared to make that work for our voters.
Jen, how did the legislature respond to your letter that was sent?
You know, I'm really disappointed because they were hearing from the election experts, you know, the election officials, the League and Common Cause and folks like us, as well as the Secretary of State, all saying that this was an impossible date, and they moved forward anyway. And it's kind of like, I'm not the expert on COVID-19, so I look to Amy Acton. I would expect the legislature to look to the experts on elections. And even the political parties, I think they are experts on how to run campaigns, but that doesn't mean they understand what it takes to run an election. And so very, very disappointed that they have really disadvantaged voters and also created massive challenges for boards of elections.
I'm going to go ahead and grab some calls now. Beth and Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I had two questions. The first one is, I mailed in absentee ballot requests for my husband and I about a week ago, and I wondered what the turnaround time was since we are under a deadline for that voting.
Any idea? Let's get that first. Erin Ackerman, okay. Any idea about that?
Sure. That's a great question. I got news this morning that we're going to be given the green light to start mailing ballots today. So if you're in Franklin County, I think they're currently gearing up for that, and I would look for something in the mail very soon.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
And what was your second question, Beth?
If the COVID-19 restrictions continue, would Ohio go towards all mail-in voting for the presidential election?
Yeah, I was going to ask that myself. I mean, what does this portend, Erin Ackerman, for the November general election?
It's certainly early on, but we're definitely trying to think through that. I think we'll see what this experiment goes and try to make a decision as we get closer to that date.
I mean, hypothetically, also, as far as the logistics of all this goes, it seems like, a smaller, less populous county would be, this would be easier for them than a large populous county like Franklin County. But that's not necessarily the case, is it, Erin? I mean, those less populated counties also tend to be less wealthy, right?
Correct, and less well-staffed. And that's an important thing when it comes to elections because, as Jen had intimated, it's not a snap your finger and turn around and create an election. It's a pretty labor-intensive process. And people are shocked when they find out that half the boards in Ohio have four or less staff workers that run that entire election. So it's an excellent point.
And I would like to interject, Anne, that another piece is that places like Columbus have our own mail sorting facility. Many counties in the state do not. So it actually takes longer often for rural counties, just in terms of the mail process. So if you are in Oxford in Butler County, your mail actually leaves the state, goes to Indiana to be sorted and back. Parts of Northwest Ohio is going to Detroit. Parts of Eastern Ohio, like Muskingum County, is going to Pittsburgh. The mail process, even under normal conditions, not COVID-19, is 3 to 5 days each way. And so we are talking about individuals needing to apply for ballots, the ballots returning to them, and them returning those ballots 3 to 5 days each way. We liken this process to table tennis played by sloths. It's a very slow process. In all vote-by-mail states, everyone automatically gets a ballot. We don't have this application piece. In all vote-by-mail states, there's also multiple locations in a county where you can drop those off, where in Ohio, our system is that the only place individuals can drop those off is in a at the vote by, you know, at the headquarters, right? So the county seat. So mm-hmm. rural areas, you might drive over an hour. If you are worried about the mail, you might drive over an hour to drop your ballot off.
If you have a car and if you can afford the gas and if you don't have to go to a job or if you don't have to take. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ifs there. That's a lot. That's a lot. Okay, let's see. Beth and Hilliard, I hope we answered your questions. Now, folks, I just want to remind you that you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Ohio General Assembly's passage of legislation that would extend absentee voting to April 28th for the Ohio 2020 primary. You have to already be registered to vote for the primary, which was supposed to take place on March 17th. If you register to vote now, you'll still be that would make sure that you could vote in the general election in November. If you have any questions, this is the day to give us a call on voting. Jen Miller, executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio, is with us. Also, Aaron Ackerman, he's executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. The number is 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so I did this yesterday, and I put the mail out today for the mail carrier to pick up. And when I did this, I went to the Secretary of State's office, and then I went to I had to say what you know, and I got the PDF file, I filled it out. I printed it out, but it wasn't until the third time I read over the instructions that I saw, third time, and I'm a trained observer, supposedly, I didn't see that I had to sign it. And then when I went to sign it, I couldn't find where to sign it. There was no actual signature place that I could find. And so I signed every page because I wasn't sure, because I'm paranoid.
And you know what? This is actually a piece that the League and other voting rights groups like All Voting is Local and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights have been working on. And look, let me first say that the vote-by-mail legislation that was passed was actually written by the League, and we're proud of what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's not implemented well, even under normal conditions. A lot of people mess up their forms. A lot of people forget to sign. They forget to say during a primary whether they want a Republican or Democrat or issue-only ballot. A lot of people get knocked out for signature mismatch, which mm-hmm. is pretty subjective. And others will put the current date where their birth date is. And the challenge with that is then we have to start the application process over again. So if I have advice for voters, the first one is apply immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is be careful. Make sure you are filling the form out. Take your time. Don't rush it. To make sure you're filling the form out right. But you are correct. We have someone in my staff who has a master's degree from the Glenn School and works for the League of Women Voters who puts the current date that she was filling it out instead of her birth date in. It's, you know, we are humans and we make mistakes. And that's hard when this is the only way you can cast your ballot this round.
And what is the obligation, Aaron Ackerman? So let's say hypothetically I put in the wrong date. I put in the current date instead of my birth date. Is there an obligation by the Board of Elections to then notify me that it was inaccurate?
Correct. That is an obligation of the board. Now, one thing I will mention is that the current process envisions us having to, again, utilizing the mail system, send a letter to that voter saying, gee, you put today's date in instead of your birth date, and we need that information. So please fill it out again and send it back to us. We had asked the legislature for some flexibility to be able to reach out and actually call a voter or email a voter and obtain the correct information so that we can process that quicker. Because as Jen has very articulately pointed out, this is a slow process and we didn't want to add layers to that. So we're going to wait for some guidance for the Secretary of State as to whether or not we're actually able to expedite that process.
Right. Because it also asked it optionally for my email address and my phone number. And I'm hoping that if I make a mistake, they would call me or email me.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Ohio law does not contemplate that at this point. So, again, given the extraordinary circumstances, we're going to wait for some guidance.
Okay, I'm going to get to some more questions now. And everybody, please be patient. We want to get to every single question. So just be patient. We'll get to you as soon as possible. Pam in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I'd like to thank you, Ian. I think that this is the go-to news. It's the best ever.
Thank you.
And my question is, in past years, I've heard that absentee ballots are not counted as quickly as the voting machine ballots, and that frequently they're not even counted. Is that true, or does that have any truth to it?
Erin or Jen, who wants to go first?
We get that.
Go ahead,
I'll take a stab. Yeah, we get that question all the time, and that is actually the exact opposite is true. The absentee ballots are counted first, and they're always counted. So when you get that first release of numbers that goes out to the media right around 7:45 p.m. on election day, that's actually the absentee ballots that we've already tabulated and counted.
Okay, and then I think maybe this answers Goldie's question, but I'll double-check. Goldie in Columbus, you're on the air?
Yes, I was concerned about our already voting absentee, if they've already been counted, and would we have received a call if there was a mistake in the ballot, which we didn't.
Okay, but you wouldn't receive a call if there's a mistake in the ballot, right?
No, not on the ballot, on the
The request for the absentee ballot?
No, actually, we actually did vote, so that would have gone through, I am assuming.
Erin Ackerman?
Sure, we're holding those right now. We've received, obviously, a lot of people voted prior to March 17th. We have those ballots. We're holding them. The law that the legislature passed actually explicitly says we're not supposed to count those ballots until April 28th, so they're being held. They will be tabulated and released along with all the other votes that we get between now and then on April 28th.
And all right, so Goldie, thank you for that call. Everybody else, the number 614-292-8513. I'm wondering, Erin Ackerman, about, this one thing to do. I love a game of ping pong played by sloths imagery that Jen Miller puts out there as far as using the Postal Service, which I worship, by the way. And they're doing incredible work out there. But the fact of the matter is, it's slower. All right. So what am I trying to do? So is this add a lot of work or a different kind of chore when you're opening up that, when it's all mostly going to be absentee ballots versus voting in person? Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, it's a very different process. And that's a very good question. There's a lot of back office work that goes into this. Not the least of which, and I hope I can help illuminate the process a little bit. So when we get these applications, as Jen talked about earlier, we're going to check the various components of that and the various pieces of required information that Ohio law requires. Once we've ascertained that all the information is correct, that we're confident that the request came from the person that we believe requested it, we will mail out that ballot. And then, again, that's going to take some time for us to find the right ballot, to stuff it in an envelope, get it out to the voter. The voter is going to send it back. That when they receive that ballot, it's actually going to have another piece of identifying information or request for identifying information that's going to need to be completed and mailed back along with the ballot. If you haven't voted by mail before, that's going to be new for you.
Yeah.
And so we're going to look at that information, again, do some double checking, make sure that the ballot came from the person that we sent it to. And then we'll go ahead and count it or process it at that point. So there is quite a bit of work involved on the back end, and it's going to be a different process for voters who haven't used it before.
And I had another question about it, because when I was filling out the application for the ballot, it asked me to specify whether I wanted a candidate, the full primary ballot, or just the issues only. What difference does it make when I go in to vote in person? They don't make me do that, do they? I just ignore those races.
Yeah,
for the primary. Why do they have to make that distinction for paper? Why not just send it, have the whole thing out, and not have to make another, in other words, why make us check another box?
You want to handle that, Jen?
Well, that would be a lot more paper. I wanted to flag for one thing that I think people don't understand, including the decision makers who set April 28th. It's also different paper. It's not just that that all of this is just sitting around for boards of elections to just throw in the mail today.
Uh-huh.
They actually need to go get paper supplies. There are states running out of paper for absentee voting right now. It's different you know, they have to do the prepaid postage. They need to have printers. And so we actually don't want to send everything out. We do need people to pick. Unfortunately, some counties then deny that ballot. I think some choose to just send an issues only ballot. But we do need to pick in the primary.
Okay.
Let's see. It's not all one big ballot. So if you request, say, a Democratic ballot, we're going to send you the ballot that contains all the Democratic candidates. If you select the Republican ballot, you know, you're going to get the same. So they're actually different ballots.
Right.
It's not all on one big piece of paper.
Okay. Let's see. Mike in Lewis Center, you're on the air. Hi, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hello.
Hey. You're on the air.
My question is for local issues like school levies. We have a school levy center. Is that going to be on the ballot, the absentee ballot?
The local issues?
Yes. And in fact, there, you know, the League of Women Voters and our allies, as well as the election officials, Aaron's group, we all recognized that while June 2nd is the best date, in our opinion, out of all the dates floated for voters' access, we all recognized that there were these local levies, which is why Aaron's group had suggested May 19th and the League had suggested mid-May at the earliest. And so there is a way that the legislature could have contemplated a way to increase access for voters, to ease the process for boards of elections, and still honor those levies.
Okay. Mike in Lewis Center, thanks for that call. I'm going to turn to Chris now in Columbus. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to mention that I'm a volunteer poll official, so I've already worked two elections.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a fun and rewarding job. So all of us in Franklin County who are poll election officials, when we get the notification of acceptance of our employment, we automatically receive an absentee ballot application. I'm holding mine in my hand right now because I voted early, so I didn't need to send this in. This is a very simple form. Everything that's required is highlighted in red. There isn't any question about date of birth or what your ID should be, like a social security number or a driver's license, where the signature should be. In fact, the signature box is the largest on the page with a huge X on it. Now, of course, these all come out pre-printed to the Franklin County election officials like me in terms of my name and address because I'm an official. But this seems as though the process that has been put together by the legislature is incredibly complicated, too many steps, and also too early. I would think that something like the application that we're using in Franklin County for the election officials would be a best practice that could be used for this particular election.
Erin Ackerman, what do you have to say?
So I think Chris raises some excellent points. And again, thank you so much for your service as a poll worker. We really appreciate that. So one of the requests that we made to the legislature was this mailing that's going to come from the Secretary of State would actually contain that application. It would have been possible for the Secretary of State to standardize that form, send it to every registered voter, make it a very easy process, take a step out of the process, because once we receive that application, we could go ahead and process it, send the ballot out to the voters. But I think instead you're going to see more of an educational piece coming from the Secretary of State rather than that application that Chris mentioned.
Chris, thank you. Thanks again for your work as a poll official, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Callers, we are going to get to every single one of you before the end of the hour, so stand by. My guests, we're talking about voting today, the voting changes. My guest, Erin Ackerman, he's Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials, and also Jen Miller, the Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides.com. allsides at WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Ohio primary and the plan that Ohio General Assembly has voted on to hold the election completely by mail, except for people with specific disabilities. The deadline to vote is April 28th. The Ohio General Assembly has passed a bill that extends that primary election absentee voting and puts the kibosh on another plan for in-person voting in June. Now that in-person voting isn't an option for most of us, some voting rights advocates are concerned that the shorter time frame disenfranchises some of the electorate. Still with us is Aaron Ackerman. He's executive director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials. Still with us is Jen Miller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters. And if you'll permit me, I'll go straight to a caller. Let's see, Brent in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Brent.
Hey. So, longtime League member here, as well as longtime WOSU member.
Thanks.
And I want to, first of all, give a shout out to Jen Miller. Jen, you're doing a wonderful job as the executive director of the League. We've been so impressed with how you've handled not just this issue, but many others. And I know whereof I speak because my spouse, Beth, was the interim executive director before you.
Okay.
So, but my question is, you know, what the heck was the General Assembly thinking? Do we have any insights from committee hearings or debate? Because I don't think June 2nd or mid-May is bumping up against any of the party's primary deadlines. I don't see how it could be a covert effort at election suppression, voter suppression, because where does that get Republicans in a primary? So do you have any insight on what the rationale is? Because I don't see it.
You know, it's a great question. I don't see it either. You know, there are at least four states that have April 28th primaries that have actually scheduled them to June 2nd. So here we are going against the tide. Delaware, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Connecticut, all looked forward and said, you know what, I don't think they said, we can't do an election on April 28th. Let's do it June 2nd. Kentucky's has theirs isn't until May 19th, and they scheduled theirs to June 23rd. The bottom line on the Democrat side, they're saying that they're concerned about their delegates, but all of these other states are going to have to figure that out, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know why the Republicans are doing this, but under no circumstance should Ohioans accept this for the long term. I do think we will see health issues in the future, and I certainly hope COVID-19 goes away soon. But this is really fundamentally unfair for the people of Ohio, and it's rushed. And at a time when Ohio is making national headlines for being leaders, we're going the exact opposite direction when it comes to our election.
Brent, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. Everybody else, the numbers are 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And let's see, I'm moving toward Suzanne in Columbus. Hi, Suzanne, you're on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a question and a comment. Maybe my question's silly, but when I went onto the website yesterday, I was first of all floored that I couldn't do my form online and make a request online. So then I wondered, do I even have a stamp in the house?
Right.
And much less, do I have three for all three of the voters in my house?
Well,
so, you know, how does this...
The application for the absentee ballot is 3 pages long. I printed it, I think, 3 or 4. And then when I put it all into the envelope, then I put 2 stamps on it because I was nervous that one stamp wouldn't you know pay the fee, so to speak. And, I mean, what about that, Aaron Ackerman?
So there was a proposal to cover the postage for both the application and the ballot itself. The good news is the ballot itself is going to be postage prepaid. So once you get your application to us,
We're going to send that back, your ballot to you, and it's going to be postage prepaid, and I think that's a good thing. I think there was a second question in there.
Well, could I put three applications in one envelope?
Yes.
Okay, so it's amazing that my printer even works, and I just can't imagine what people who aren't as in my situation are doing. People like my father doesn't have access to a printer. He goes to the library.
And most people are out of work, and so they can't use the printer at work,
like
I did.
How disenfranchised is this making everyone? It's really, really horrendous. Yeah.
Jen Miller, and the libraries are closed, so they can't do it there.
Right.
Yeah. I do want to know, you can call your Board of Election and request one as well. So you don't have to have a printer to do it.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Jen. That's good to know. Well, the website was really uninformative.
Exactly.
So thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, when I went to the website, that was not clear to me that I could call in.
Right.
Another option is VoteOhio.gov, or Ohio Vote.
Right.
VoteOhio.gov would also be a good resource for you.
And then another thing on the application for the absentee ballot, it says you have to sign it. Like I said, I read that three times before I actually saw that. And then there's nowhere to sign it. They don't give you a place to sign, so I signed every page. Because I'm paranoid.
Thank you for pointing that out. Several things here. First off, a lot of people are denied their absentee ballot for signature mismatch, and especially seniors, people with disabilities. And so that's part of the problem of having to apply for your ballot. In all vote-by-mail states, you don't do that. Everyone just gets your ballot. It's an extra hoop, and they have more time to participate. I wanted to point out the stamp piece, because if you have to apply to get your ballot, and you have to either expend gasoline to get your application to your Board of Election, or you need to put a stamp on your on an envelope and send it in. That's a poll tax. This is not an acceptable way that Ohio has gone forward, and we would argue it's unconstitutional. But more importantly, I want to just point out that Suzanne is completely right. This process is going to be easiest for people who have a printer and internet at home, who have postage stamps at home, who know today they're listening, or they have the ability to listen or know what's going on, that they should request today. That's going to be in a far different situation than individuals who may not find out until they get the postcard, which may not be until next week or the week after, because mail takes time, as does printing things. And then they have to turn around and do all of this. So I do just want to say that everyone, you know, you cannot give people stamps. Your daughter, your husband, you know, you can give stamps that way, but you cannot give stamps. But you can and may want to, if you have a printer, you may want to put absentee ballot applications, you know, under people's doormats or something in your neighborhood, because a lot of people don't have printers today, and that's a much more efficient way to do it.
Right. Suzanne?
And I want to point out, there was one other thing that I wanted to kind of unfold a little bit, because there was an excellent point about kind of being shocked that you can't go online and do this process online.
Uh-huh.
There's actually legislation pending in the Ohio General Assembly. It's Senate Bill 291, which incidentally is supported by both the League of Women Voters and the Ohio Association of Election Officials, that would, in fact, create a process to be able to do this application all online, fill it out, submit it. And again, I understand that helps a certain segment of people that have internet access, but I think that would be a tremendous improvement to our election administration system.
Okay. Suzanne, thanks for that call. We heard from one of our folks here, Amy Jurevich. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with her name on WOSU Public Media. She has said that she was on hold for 20 minutes yesterday trying to request a ballot by phone and had to hang up. She said they need more people answering the phones. Now I'm turning to Alice in Columbus. Hi, Alice. You're on the air. And Alice, I'm going to rush everybody now because I want to get to all the questions. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, Ann. My husband and I mailed in our absentee ballot requests early in March, and we've received the absentee ballot, filled it out. It's very easy. It was not three pages long. It was just one page. We put both of ours in the same envelope. My concern is we did vote, as I said, absentee. He's blind now, and so his signature is like a scribble. The only thing you can really see is the R beginning his last name. So we're worried as to whether it will. And I put a little note over to the left side that he is blind.
Uh-huh.
We're afraid it'll be thrown out. We don't know what to do about this.
Okay. Well, Aaron Ackerman?
You know, Jen has pointed out that there are, you know, we're not signature experts. It is a requirement that we do a signature match. Everything is going to be handled on a case-by-case basis, but certainly I think you're going to find that boards are going to try to err on the side of the voter and count every ballot that they can.
You think, okay, so for some reason, Aaron's, it's going out, in and out, saying that the boards are going to try to err on the side of the voter and count every ballot. Thanks for that.
And let me just jump in and say that people should, if you have a disability or you have, you know, maybe arthritis or something, go ahead and put a post-it note or something on there, because a lot of people are turned away for signature mismatch.
Okay.
That may help.
Just you can't be too careful. Like I said, someone said, when I talk about three pages, I'm talking about the application for the absentee voter is 3 pages long. I printed it out and I signed my name on every page because I couldn't find a place to sign it. So, Alice, thanks for that call. Thomas and Powell, you're next. Hi, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hi there. I turned in an application for absentee ballot March 17th. But we specified the June 2nd date. And earlier you said if any date on the application is wrong, it won't be valid.
Yeah, what happens with that?
Do I have to apply again?
Yeah.
No. You should be okay, but call and make sure that it goes through. The problem is people often mess up the birth date category. But you should be able to put March 17th or June 2nd or April 28th and have any of those count. They still know what election you're talking about.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
Let's see. And then I'm going now to Dan in Mount Sterling. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah. I've been hearing that, the application is 3 pages. But when I filled out mine, I only saw one page. And in the PDF. Is my application need to be resubmitted?
Aaron Ackerman, I when I printed it out, it was 3 pages. I filled out 3 pages worth of stuff.
I'm honestly, Ann, a little confused as to why that is, because the application should be a pretty straightforward one-page document that just requires a handful of information. I'm not sure where you got it, but I would encourage everyone to go to voteohio.gov or to your official Board of Elections website to get that form, and that will absolutely get you the correct form to fill out.
Crap. Okay. All right, Dan. You're sounding like you're on the right track. I sound like I'm on the wrong track. But it asked all the questions. Still the same questions.
Because people, well-intentioned people are trying to help and get applications out to people. At the end of the day, we just need the information. Which is, your date of birth, your signature, and a few other pieces of identifying information. So, Anne, as long as you put that on your 3 pages, you'll be fine.
Okay. But then I was thinking when she said, put more than one application in, and I'm worried, I worry about that. I thought about that when I was mailing mine in. The people I live with, they've already voted. They early voted as it was, but I wondered, if you put 3 in, are they going to be able to discern? I don't know. It's new, so who knows? We have one. Okay, we're out of time. So we need to talk about this some more if people still have questions. In the meantime, Aaron Ackerman, Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Election Officials, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, and happy to come back if people have more questions.
Okay. And Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio, as always, thanks for your time. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. Voters can contact the League with questions.
Okay.
Well.
So we'll put those links on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks to our All Sides staff. We're working a lot. on a lot of issues, anything that we can that revolves around the coronavirus outbreak. Producer Aaron Esmont, producer Matthew Rand, our interns Atiyah Turi, Bobby Gerberich, and Max Garrison. Video production still by Nick Payne. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French are all doing a wonderful job. Thanks for everyone for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.